You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Yeah. You know what it is. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow. Yeah. You know what it is. Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
Good evening, football fans. Wow, sorry about that technical difficulty there. Good evening, and guess what, guys? Great exclusive coming up for you. Nate Washington, former wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Tennessee Titans, Houston Texans, and New England Patriots. Guys, very excited to have him call into the show. Just waiting on him. He's also a two-time Super Bowl champion for Super Bowl 40 and 43. Like I said, guys, we're just going to wait for him to call in. Again, 6 o'clock, that's when he's supposed to call, and he messaged me today, actually, even liked and retweeted and on Twitter, so sounds like he will be calling in. Just going to go ahead and wait on. While we wait, guys, why don't we talk a little bit about some NFL buzz going on here. I actually had a question brought up to me today about Terrence Williams, and I'll go ahead and read the question here, and the question is from Aaron. I won't give his last name, but it's Aaron. He says his question is, what do we think is going to happen with Terrence Williams? And I had mentioned, his agent has come out with a statement saying that once the facts come out, he will be vindicated. And then he revised his question saying, will we cut Terrence Williams because they've cut Dez, and what will happen with their passing game, the Cowboys passing game? And I pretty much told Aaron that, you know, Jerry Jones, it's not uncommon for Jerry Jones to have players with off-the-field issues. So if Jerry Jones and the Cowboys decide to keep Terrence Williams, it would not surprise me. It really would not. However, if they decide to get rid of Terrence Williams, how does this affect the Cowboys passing game? It would affect it a little bit. Last year, Terrence Williams caught 53 receptions for 0 touchdowns and didn't even amass over 600 yards. Actually, the last two seasons, Terrence Williams did not amass over 600 yards. The year before last, he caught 44 receptions and only had 4 touchdowns. Okay? So he wasn't a huge factor in the passing game these last couple seasons. Obviously, with Dak Prescott, Cole Beasley is going to be a factor because Cole Beasley, as a slot receiver, is emerging as Dak's favorite target. Not to mention, Allen Hurns is the new number one guy for their wide receiver squad. And, of course, the Dallas Cowboys love their third-round selection in Michael Gallup. And there's been a lot of talks of them wanting to use last year's seventh-round pick, Noah Brown, from Ohio State. They want to put him more in the pass game because he has similar size and speed to Dez Bryant. And he has pretty good ability to make special catches, and he did so during his time at Ohio State. So, to me, I'm not expecting a whole lot of difference as far as if Terrence Williams has gone from the Dallas Cowboys. I'm going to go ahead and check and see if he has called in. He has not. Again, just waiting on Nate Washington to call in. Let's go ahead and go to some NFL buzz while we wait, guys. Just making sure here. Just clicking on stuff, checking everything around here. All right. And it looks like some rookies have signed deals already. Billy Price, the Bengals first-rounder, center from Ohio State, has signed his rookie deal. And if you guys have not heard, owners have decided to vote where the NFL draft is going to be, and it's decided that it's going to be in Nashville, Tennessee. So the Tennessee Titans will host a NFL draft come next April. Very excited. We're actually, Straight Football Talk is actually going to be in talks and try to get us down there, do a live show during the first round of the draft. So very excited to try to get that taken care of and get that out of the way here, guys. Let's see here. The Lions rookie has been – wow. So apparently Rove of NFL.com has decided that offensive lineman Ragnow, the first-round selection for the Detroit Lions, will be a Pro Bowler. I'm not buying that. I actually gave the Lions a C on that grade as far as that, just that one pick. for their draft pick. I just wasn't a fan. You know, there was better centers on board, like James Daniels from Iowa. Even Billy Price I had higher on my board, even though he had some injury concern. So I'm not knocking on Ragnow, but I just – no. Free agent Junior Gallette is considering retirement. He has been he's an 8-year pro, was with the Redskins recently, and he was a heck of a linebacker. Last year he didn't do as well as he had in the past, but, you know, it's not surprising that he is considering retirement. Actually, I'm going to just check on my phone here, and let's see if we have a message from Nate Washington. And he did message me saying he did try to call in and nothing is going on with the operator or anything to talk to. So I went ahead and messaged him back to go ahead and try to call again. And, guys, if you would like to ask Nick Washington a question, if he permits it, we'll ask him when he calls into the show here. If he permits it, guys, dial that number, 718-508-9883. And as we're waiting for Nate Washington to call in, you guys can call in. We can talk any kind of football questions you have, any questions. Again, I just brought up Terrence Williams earlier. Got a lot of NFL buzz going on here. So we're just waiting to see what's going on there as far as the statement that's going to be coming out with Terrence Williams. So we're still waiting for Nate Washington to call in. And let's see here. Yep. I think he has seen the message. Yeah, he just sent that to me 2 minutes ago. So he is wanting to call in. Okay, guys. Well, again, as we wait, if you guys have not heard, Johnny Football Manziel has signed a 2-year deal with the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the CFL. So he will play in the CFL for the time being. As far as Johnny Manziel goes, I have to say I'm him trying to make an NFL comeback. Now that he's got his act cleaned up, very, very happy for him. Hoping that he can fulfill his dreams and come back to the NFL and, see what happens. And, guys, it does look like we have a caller, so we're going to go ahead and answer that call. Good evening. This is Straight Football Talk. I am Teddy the Bear Tate. Who is calling in?
I think my name is Nate Washington.
Nate, well, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. It's actually just myself tonight. Co-host had something come up, so it's just going to be me asking you questions, if that's all right with you, Nate.
That's fine. Shoot away.
Awesome. I'm sorry?
I said, no, you can go ahead. Shoot away. Shoot away with your questions.
All right. Let's do it, man. So you attended Tiffin University in Tiffin, Ohio, actually not too far from where we're at, just a couple hours away, and you hold multiple records, including receptions in a game, yards in a game, yards in a season, touchdowns in a season, career receptions, career yards, and career touchdowns. You also became the first Tiffin University player in the modern era to play in the NFL. After accomplishing all that, what did that mean to you? Coming from a small school in Toledo and then going to a small university and then making it to the big leagues, what did that mean to you?
Well, to be honest, it was a truly gratifying accomplishment, but it was nothing that I set out for. I went to school to get an education. I wasn't thinking that the NFL would be something feasible coming from Tiffin University. And especially with the size that I had at the time, I really didn't pay attention to the NFL. I just made sure that every single game and every single opportunity that I had, it was something that I cherished. Every single Saturday that I had an opportunity to play football, every single practice, every single time I was able to touch that field in college, I just took advantage of it. And ironically, my senior year came around and scouts from the NFL started showing up. It wasn't nothing that I was aiming for. My main goal was just to stay out of trouble. My mother was a hardworking, praying woman, church-going woman that did everything she could to keep me out of trouble. And her biggest concern was just me getting an education. So when I left for school, it wasn't to go play football or be this outstanding football player. It was to go get an education and hopefully get a degree so that it could help me further myself in life, And ironically, just due to the hard work and the hard grind, it just all panned out for me a different way.
Absolutely. And God bless your mother for trying to keep you straight and keep you on the right track. I mean, that's so huge, especially in these, in this day and age. You see kids, so many kids now getting in trouble, and not going to college and everything. So good on her.
Yeah, definitely. She didn't give me a choice, not for it.
That kind of happens with moms, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I don't mind, though. You know, being a young guy and coming from an inner city school like I was coming from, you know, it's an opportunity to get lost and caught up in a system where you don't need to be. You know, she made sure that she was in my corner the whole way, making sure that I was doing what I was supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. Now, you went undrafted in 2005 and signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. With the draft recently ending, can you please tell us, you know, Straight Football Talk and the fans that are listening in right now, what your draft experience was like?
Well, my draft experience was pretty null and void. Honestly, I didn't get invited to the combine in Indianapolis, so only thing that I had to work off of was my pro day. God that a lot of scouts showed up to my pro day at the time. It was quite funny because the day of my pro day, we had a bad rain day in Tiffin, Ohio, and obviously we didn't have any indoor facilities or anything of that sort. So I actually worked out at the local YMCA there and in the gym and did a lot of my combine style drills right there in the gym, you know, and everybody was giving me good feedback, and I was hearing a lot of things about maybe fifth round to seventh round that I may have a shot at somebody actually picking me up in the draft. So the first day, I don't even know if I tried my best to not even pay attention to the draft. I knew I wouldn't go the first day, and those first couple rounds back at that time, I think it was still 2 days of the draft that it was going on, and the first day was like rounds 1 through 3 or 1 through 4, something like that. And the second day was the back end of the draft. And I ended up watching the back end of the draft with a couple friends of mine and my mom. She cooked us dinner. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't get that phone call. You know, I didn't get that phone call during the draft. But immediately after the draft was over, my agent called, and he was excited because I started to receive a number of calls from NFL teams hoping to get me in into their rookie camps as an undrafted rookie free agent, excuse me. And the opportunity just kept growing. I had a couple opportunities to select from at that time. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the process, but as an undrafted free agent rookie, you basically get the opportunity to choose from which teams call you. You know, it's not necessarily that team calls you and you're locked into them. So I had a couple opportunities on the table. The two main opportunities were the Pittsburgh Steelers, obviously, and the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions took me through quite a ring. You know, they had promised me some things, and I actually went ahead and agreed in terms with them. My agent reached out to every other team, including the Pittsburgh Steelers at the time, and told everybody that we were appreciative, but we were going to go ahead and go with the Detroit Lions due to the fact they made some promises that obviously they didn't come through on. And when we went to send back in the paperwork, they called us back at that moment and told us that they were going to go with a different guy. After we had already called all the teams and told them that we were going to go with the Detroit Lions. So it was kind of mayhem. I was kind of heartbroken. I didn't think my opportunity was going to work out because at that time my agent had scrambled back and called all of the teams that were offering me, and they kind of declined me. They said they went with other people that had already accepted their offers, and it was looking very bleak at the time. So about an hour and a half, 2 hours later, my friends that just took me out the house and took me over a cousin's of mine, and we were sitting over there. They were trying to keep my mind off the situation, and my agent called back, and he was like, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers called back, and they said they made a mistake. They thought you were someone else, but they really are excited about getting you in the camp if you want to go ahead and sign that deal. And I told them that there was no other place that I would rather be in that, but in that black and gold. And it was very exciting the time for me. me and my family were excited. But as you know, as an undrafted free agent rookie, you only have a shot. You know, you're not guaranteed to go and make that team. So as my family, and actually I was at that time, we were all excited for the opportunity. I think everybody else was pretty much caught in me being a first-round draft pick and it being guaranteed. And at that time, I still had to prove myself. So it was a long process. It was very heartbreaking when the Detroit Lions pulled. But, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers came through, and after that, it's just been a fairy tale story ever since.
After that, it was history. Now, what's interesting, you asked me if I was familiar with the undrafted process, and that was actually my next question for you, was what other teams were interested in you. So you read my mind through the phone and just went ahead and answered. I love it, man.
yeah, definitely.
Now, there's obviously a lot of incoming prospects coming, a lot of good crop coming in as far as NFL prospects go. Are you excited to see any of these prospects in particular? Has there been a guy that you've just been watching and been like, man, I can't wait to watch this guy play on Sunday?
Well, obviously, I think I'm in contingents with everyone else when they're pretty impressed with this kid, Saquon Barkley. I think to see what Ezekiel Elliott's done and his success from leaving Ohio State and going to the Dallas Cowboys, and to see the athletic ability in this guy coming in now, Saquon, is truly amazing to see those guys at the running back position continuing to excel, you know, because for a period of time, you know, it was all quarterbacks and receivers that were getting the main attributes of guys coming out, and the running backs that kind of fell back for a little bit. But, you know, it seems like they're coming back around, and there's a lot of talent at that position. So I'm going to be interested, you know, as a receiver. You know, we kind of don't want to agree with it, but we know it's going to be take a run game in order to get us the ball, you know. So it'll be very interesting to see some of these teams, especially with Saquon Barkley right now and the ability of Eli Manning and Odell Beckham returning and Sterling Sharp and those young kids that they have on that roster, young tight end that they have, to see if that run game up there can help Eli pull some things back together.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said, obviously Eli Manning is aging right now, you know, getting drafted in 2004. He's been in the league for a long period of time, and he's not getting any younger. And unfortunately, for every player, for every athlete, Father Time eventually wins in the end. I mean, the only one I can think of right now is Adam Vinatieri and Tom Brady. Those two guys seem like their careers are never ending right now.
I tell you, it does, doesn't it? But I tell you, eventually, it's going to catch up with us all. You know, Tom and Adam are definitely two idol persons. I mean, two guys that have lasted in this league because they've not only taken care of their business, but they've taken care of their bodies and understand that the game is going to be determined not only on that field on Sunday, but during the week. And it's going to catch up with us all. You know, it's unfortunate, but this is not a game that you're going to grow old in until you're done.
Yes. Now, if you could talk to Saquon Barkley or any of these rookies, what advice would you give to them? Especially, you know, you going through the draft process the way you did, there's obviously going to be challenges ahead, even if they did get drafted in the first round. What advice would you give to some of these incoming rookies?
I think it's just take everything one day at a time. You know, it's going to be so much information that's going to be flooded towards these guys with playbooks, different requests from family and friends now that the expectations will change that they're in the NFL. You know, endorsement deals, business-wise, handling all those things. And it's just important, you know, you can't go into these things with a strategic plan thinking that everything is going to go the way that you want it to go. You have to be prepared to make daily adjustments, you know, even if it's with your schedule, to make sure you're still getting your work in, on the field, in the weight room, in the classroom, and still handling your business outside of the field, you know, making sure your bills are paid, making sure your family is taken care of, making sure that you're just not becoming a yes man for everybody and giving them everything that they want and need, and making sure that you're still taking care of the things that you need to take care of. I think it's a huge responsibility that a lot of these guys see it as just playing football on the next level, but in reality, you're placed with 40-year-old responsibilities at 20, 21 years old. You know, you're taking care of people, you're paying the bills, you're making sure, even though, you know, it is practice and it's football game, going to practice every day is how you pay your bills, you know. So with that being said, you just have to take it one day at a time. You can't put too much on your plate too early. The responsibility of the playbook is going to come. Don't pressure yourself. Just make sure that you enjoy this time with the responsibility to know that it's business now. This is a career. This is not just a job. This is not just a game anymore. You know, this is something that guys build 401ks and retirement plans in. So you have to understand that the longer you can stay around, the more it will build your opportunity to become something even after the game. So as much as I want to tell guys to enjoy the game and have fun with it, I also want everybody to know that, you know, these are 21, 22, 20-year-old kids with real adult responsibility right now, and it's not going to be easy, but it's imperative that they take it one day at a time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to shift gears here, Nate. Let's go ahead and talk about when you joined the Pittsburgh Steelers. While you were with the Steelers, you worked with some of the top-tier players in the NFL, including future Hall of Famers, names like Hines Ward, Heath Miller, Jerome Bettis, Troy Polamalu, and Ben Roethlisberger, just to name a few, of course. But did you connect with any players in particular just right away, and what was it like to be a part of such a talented roster?
Well, I'll say this. You know, the connection was strong throughout the whole team. Till this day, you know, all of those guys are still my brothers. I'm in a group chat right now. It's 18 of us in a group chat. So, and the other guys that are in the group chat, we still chat a lot. You know, that team definitely was a family. You know, from Jerome. Jerome was the first guy that spoke to me after I made the team and put me in a headlock. And from that day, he told me I was his little brother. And it goes the same for everybody else. You know, Willie Parker, Hines Ward, James Ferrier, Casey Hampton, Troy Polamalu. Like you said, the numbers go on and go on, but we're still in connection a lot, all of us. I definitely talk to somebody from those old teams definitely every day. I talk to somebody, whether it's the group of 18 guys in that chat or one of the other guys just hitting me up on an individual, just chatting. You know, so those guys have been influential, not for me just with my career, because obviously after leaving those guys, a lot of those things that they instilled into me carried on, you know, in order for me to reach 11 years, you know, being from Tiffin University. So things and those lessons that they instilled in me, it carried on throughout my career and even to this day. You know, it isn't just a football thing with those guys. Those guys are family men. They're businessmen. If I have any business advice or anything that I need advising, I jump on the phone. I don't trust anybody but Jerome and Hines Ward today. I'll call those guys in a heartbeat, and they'll give me all the information that I need. And if they don't have any information, they'll put me in a connection with the people that I need to talk to. Joy Porter, he's been like a big brother to me, making sure that I do all the things that I'm supposed to with my retirement and staying connected to the game, because they believe that I can still, you know, maybe coach or be an analyst or some type of commentator of that kind. So it's just not with the game. They've continued to push me as a man, make sure that I continue to grow and in the right direction, and hold me accountable, not only on the field if I drop a pass. You know, they make sure I'm doing what I'm supposed to do at home. You know, those guys have been more than just teammates. They have definitely been family to me.
Absolutely. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool that right away you mentioned Jerome Bettis as taking you under his wing. And I know watching his segments and his interviews, you know, he had, you know, went out to L.A. at the beginning of his career, and it was all flashy, and, you know, his mom had to reel him in and get him back to reality. So it's very cool that he was right there to help you make sure you were on track and getting you where you need to be at. That is awesome.
Yeah, definitely. He's from Detroit originally, and I'm from Toledo, and they're really like 40 minutes away from each other. So that was an instant connection right there with that. He made sure, he was like, boy, why you gonna tell me you was from Toledo? You know, you got I-75 connection. I got to make sure I take care of you. So it was definitely a good thing, man. I never was expecting it. You know, he was a Hall of Famer even when he was still put on the pads, but hands down, one of the most humblest guys I've ever met in my life.
Too cool, man. Now, you, obviously, Nate, you didn't just win one Super Bowl with the Steelers, but you helped them win two Super Bowls. What was it like to be a part of two championship teams?
Well, the first one, obviously, was my rookie year. The year before,
sure.
I was at Tiffin University. You know, I was playing in front of 200 to 500 people, you know, and here it is a year later, not even a whole year later, I'm playing in front of not only 70,000 in the stadium, but millions of people across the world, you know, are able to watch, you know, what I'm doing. So it was a shock, you know, it was a culture shock for me, but my eyes never got too big, you know. The beginning of the playoff run, my rookie year, Jerome, once again, Jerome grabbed me on the way into the shower to go pray, and he grabbed me. He said, hey, somebody rookie class got to win a Super Bowl. Why not it be you? And I looked at him and I said, you're right. You're right. So So you know, from that day forward, you know, I always made sure that even if it was just practice, I brought what I could to the table and made sure that the team got better, you know. And as it just continued to grow, by the fourth year, when our second one came around and I was more involved, you know, it had became a bigger stage for me. You know, it became a bigger spotlight. I was doing a lot more for the team. I was playing a lot more. I had more catches that year, obviously, in year four than year one. And those guys, you know, to this day, you know, those guys constantly, with all due respect to my college, but they're amazed a lot of times that I went to Tiffin University because of the valuable things that I brought to the table for the team at that time. So it was exciting. You know, those guys, as I said, were like brothers to me. So it's almost like imagining a Super Bowl run with a band of brothers that you grew up with, you know, and what other way could you have it? You know, everybody was unselfish. Everybody wanted just to see each other succeed and make sure that we won both times. You know, the first one in 05, obviously, we wanted to get Jerome back to Detroit, make sure he retired on the upper echelon of things. And then the second time around, you know, it was just a brotherhood the second time around in 09. And it was a stage where we would never accept anything mediocre from anybody. You know, if there was a play that I caught a ball and I may have gotten tackled for 6 yards, you know, our coach Bruce Arians at the time was our offensive coordinator, and he would have plays where I watch on film that he would call BFM, and he would call them, excuse my language, but bare effing minimum. You know, he didn't accept it.
Right.
It wasn't about, you know, if a ball was thrown deep to me, it wasn't about accepting a pass interference. He wanted to catch. He wanted to catch and a touchdown. And with those things being, you know, understood in that locker room and understood in that building, that 09 Super Bowl, you know, we just wanted to go out and just compete every day, just make sure that everybody was getting better and expecting the most from each other. And it was definitely both times were, you know, moments of my life that I will never forget. It was bigger than the games. I remember the Monday through Friday grinds. I remember the, you know, off season of preparing for those seasons. So I know a lot of people may remember just those Super Bowls, but those seasons were special to me because I knew what it took to get there.
I tell you what, I not being a homer here, but I am actually a Steelers fan. So obviously talking to you is obviously very nice, very nice. And, but I can remember watching both seasons, in both Super Bowls. I watched them with my grandpa, who's a diehard Steelers fan as well.
Mm-hmm.
But probably one of the most memorable plays was the AFC Championship game where Troy Polamalu got that interception to take you guys to the Super Bowl. I mean, I will never forget that play. And then obviously, you know, all the plays that happened in the Super Bowl, I mean, it was phenomenal. And had a lot of fun watching you guys play. And then obviously in 05, Jerome Bettis, like you said, retiring on top. I mean, what better way to do it, retire than as a champion, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly, definitely.
Now Nate, I'm sure you've been asked this question a lot, but, you know, being in two Super Bowls, was one Super Bowl more meaningful than the other one, or was it, you know, about the same? I mean, you were talking about the brotherhood and everything. I didn't, you know, kind of trying to throw you out here.
Right. Well, to be honest, you know, they both hold their own significant relevance.
Absolutely.
The first one, obviously, you know, it holds such special meaning to me because, like I said, you know, at Tiffin University, I never in a million years would have expected that I would have an opportunity at the NFL. You know, so just the year before, I was at Tiffin University telling myself that the NFL wouldn't work out, telling myself that, you know, make sure you get your education so you can get a good job and a degree. And then here it is. A year later, not only am I in the NFL playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I'm in the Super Bowl. You know, so that in itself, that transition of time, it holds so much importance to me. But in the same sentence, you know, it's almost like, you know, my fourth year was very important to me too because, to be honest, you know, my rookie year, I only played in, I think it was 3 regular season games. The rest of the games, I was in a sweatsuit. I was on a 53-man roster, but I only dressed for 3 games. And then I played the whole entire playoffs. And my
fourth year in the 09 Super Bowl, I played the whole year. You know, there was game plans made for me. There was specific, you know, plays designed for me and those type of things. So to know I had a bigger hand in that success that year, it holds relevance to me as well. So it's kind of about the same, you know. They both hold different type of relevance to me, though. You know, one is just for the transition of time to not ever think I would be in that position. And then the other was, you know, to actually look at, back at that season and to know that I helped win some of those games. I helped push some of my teammates. You know, I was on the field at that time and helped contribute. You know, that definitely holds relevance to me as well.
Absolutely. Now, Nate, after earning your second ring, you went to free agency and landed with the Tennessee Titans, and you signed a six-year deal worth $27 million. Describe what it meant to you to be, you know, starting out, like you said before, in college you didn't even think you were going to play in the NFL, and you actually went undrafted. And then, you know, here it is a few years later, you land a nice, healthy contract with the Tennessee Titans. What did that mean to you?
Well, this is where I'll start this story. Fourth year in Pittsburgh, there was a lot of talk going around, especially around our locker room, that, you know, me hitting free agency next year, that there was a lot of teams that were, you know, interested. There was a lot of speculation about me, you know, maybe signing a big deal or getting a big opportunity. And at the time, Hines came up to me, and he was we had a day of practice. We were going up to meetings, and he came up to me and he said, "Listen, I know you want to come back here." And he was right. You know, he was completely right. I wanted to go back, but he was like, "You know, I know you want to come back here. I know this place means a lot to you, but let me tell you something. You have won two Super Bowl rings in 4 years, your first 4 years in the league. If you don't go get your money, I'm going to slap you every single day you come back to this locker room." So, like, even for me, my fourth year, like, I didn't realize it. I didn't realize what I was, you know, what was ahead of me. I didn't know that there was a big deal. I didn't know that there was huge interest. I still didn't see myself as a big superstar. I was just a humble guy, just wanted to play football. So when the opportunity came up that offseason and we started receiving a lot of phone calls, me and my agent, from teams hoping that we can visit, I was shocked. I didn't know what to do. You know, I called my mom at the time, and I was really just telling her everything, and she didn't obviously know anything about what was going on, but I was so excited and shocked. Even after being in the NFL 4 years and winning two Super Bowls, I knew that this was going to be an opportunity to take care of my family for the rest of my life. So it was a huge accomplishment for me. I was very excited. You know, I didn't really know how to handle it because, like I said, at the time, I was just wanting to play football. You know, that money or that situation in itself, it didn't mean that much to me. Only thing that meant to me was people seeing me as valuable, you know, people seeing me as an asset. And that was the most gratifying thing to me. You know, the money that was made, the transition from Pittsburgh to Tennessee was okay. But for me, it was just the importance to see my career growing, me establishing myself in an industry that I didn't ever think I would be in, you know. So it was definitely exciting for me, and I was gratified by the opportunity.
Absolutely. And I have to say, Hines Award talent, making sure you go get your money, that was pretty funny. I enjoyed that a lot. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nate.
No, you okay?
Okay.
Go ahead.
Now, when you were with Tennessee, you worked with several different quarterbacks during your time there. Who was your favorite quarterback to work with? Obviously, there was Jake Locker and Zach Mettenberger. You know, who was your favorite quarterback to work with?
Oh, man, you're going to get me in trouble. To be honest,
I have to ask these questions, man.
Yeah, I know. And it's okay. Don't worry about it. I'm pretty sure the guys understand. But, you know, I had an opportunity to play with a lot of good guys, you know, from Vince Young to Kerry Collins to Zach Mettenberger and a number of guys that did everything they could, you know, while they were there to give us the opportunity to win. But I would have to go out on the limb and say the most gratifying probably and the most enjoyable was probably Jake Locker. Just for the simple fact that there were so many games, and not just like saying it like that, but there was a number of games that we were down pretty bad, you know, in the fourth quarter, whether it was 10, 14, 21, it didn't matter. We were down, you know, and at those times, you know, when I felt like, you know, that other guys didn't understand the situation, other guys didn't understand the sense of urgency, we weren't getting to the place where, you know, I had been previously with the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know, I was, you know, very low. And it seemed like every single time I questioned myself, Jake would pop up in my face, like, don't give up on me right now. I know we down. We going to push through. We got to put good film on there. We going to keep fighting all the way till it's zero. And just to have a guy like that, because, honestly, I was always that guy when I got to Tennessee. You know, I was always that guy encouraging people, making sure that we push through, trying to tell guys, trying to be a good leader. You know, but honestly, you know, as a leader, you come up short sometimes, too, and you begin to question some things. But when Jake was in that huddle, when Jake was on that sideline with us healthy, there was never a time that I didn't feel like we didn't have a real shot. No matter what time was on the clock, no matter what the score said, I remember we played at the Atlanta Falcons one year, and Jake got in the fourth quarter, and we were down like 17 or 21 or something like that, and it was only like 8 minutes to go. Well, within that first 5 minutes, we scored two touchdowns. He threw me two touchdowns in that first 5 minutes. And we had a shot at winning that game. And that's just what type of guy he was. You know, it didn't matter. For me, looking back at that time and to speak on it now, I don't even think it was about football itself for him. I think it was just about making sure that every single minute of his life he had to be a great man, he took advantage of that. And in those minutes, he knew, like, it wasn't about the score. It wasn't about going out and making some amazing play. It was about making sure that everybody knew once they turned this film on, after seeing this game this week, that they knew we were going to be a band of guys that were going to fight to the end. And that meant a lot to me. So to have a guy like that, you know, in that period of time that I didn't make it to the playoffs in Tennessee, to have a guy like that with me, it definitely helped me through. He helped me through a lot of hard times that I questioned myself mentally or questioned what we were going through. So it would probably have to be Jake Locker.
Awesome. And see, the thing is, too, is, you know, you look at Jake Locker and he's considered a bust now, but to hear the way you're describing him, he sounds like a heck of a quarterback, you know?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that he's not playing anymore.
Yeah, definitely. Everybody has their own opinion, but, you know, like I said, the game wasn't as important as being a good man to him. Being a man was first for Jake. You know, being a man meant being on time in meetings, working hard in the weight room, paying attention in class sessions. Those were assets of being a man. You know, being a good football player, sometimes we can't determine. Even the best basketball players, football players, the best athletes across the board have off days. But what kind of man are you going to be in that day? Are you going to continue to fight? Are you going to continue to give your all, even though you may have a bad catch or a drop? Like, are you going to continue to run your routes hard because you had a bad day? Like, so that's what type of guy he was. You know, I know a lot of fans may get caught in the game and it's important to them, but, and I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but being a football player wasn't important to Jake. Being a good man was. That is still never giving up. That is still working hard. And that is still being a quality guy no matter what was going on. And, you know, when it was time for him to hit free agency and a possibility of him growing and continuing on his career, you know, he realized, you know, it wasn't about the perception for him. It wasn't about going out and proving everybody that, hey, I'm still playing football, or worrying about asking the questions that, oh, you were a bust, so why did you retire so quick? And those, it didn't matter to him. He did what was right for his family. He did what was right for himself and what he was happy with. I still talk to him like once every 2 weeks. We are definitely in contact, you know, and we don't talk anything about football. You know, we just talk about family. I asked about his dad. Was a real, real good friend of mine. His dad was so cool. So we talk about family all the time, and that's the reason why I think he's important to me. You know, he's a real good friend of mine.
Now, Nate, you're talking about Jake Locker and his leadership. Now, I want to pause you for a little bit. During the 2013 season, you were elected team captain, and you may know where I'm going with this. Week 3 against the San Diego Chargers, you helped your team lead to victory by using the movie 300 references. I have to know what references you were using during that game, and can you demonstrate some of those for us?
Well, that was quite some time ago, 2013. The one reference that I did use for with the I use multiple, but the one that that's vivid for me and sticks out the most is the one where Leonidas goes and he meets the other Greeks, and they meet on the hill, and you know they're all gathered there, and you know the Spartans are behind. I mean, they're behind Leonidas, and they're all quiet. And then the other Greeks walk up, and they look at Leonidas, and they say, "You know, we were told that you were coming with a big army," and that's what I used to tell my teammates. You know, a lot of times we were perceived as something that we weren't. You know, a team that we were losing at the time, a team that didn't care. And the one thing that Leonidas told them when he looked at them, and he looked at the one man, he said, "You, sir, what do you do?" He said, "I'm a blacksmith." He said, "You, sir, what do you do?" I said, I'm a gardener." He said, "You, sir, what do you do?" And the point was, when he asked his Spartans, they all were trained and ready for war. And that's what I told my teammates. No matter what they perceive of us, no matter what number of us are healthy, no matter what, how many nicks or bangs we have, we are trained warriors. We turn down no battle. We will run into this fight head on with the full head of steam, just like Leonidas in the Brave 300. And whatever falls from it, falls. At the end of the day, our legend, our respect will live forever. And that's the way we have to play this game. And that's the one thing, the things that I carry from the 300 story over to my teammates that day. They were pretty stoked about it, but there was other things, but it was just for me. I had been standing in those circles for so long, you know, and the speech from the guy coming from in the middle, no matter how inspiring it was always standard. It was always vague and generalized. Let's go out here and fight, you know, and I always stood there at those times and wished and hoped of what was said to me at those times. So when I had my opportunity to get in the middle of that circle, I just would always say what I hoped what was said to me at that time in order to go out and give encouragement that there's going to be testing times throughout this game, but will you fight or will you quit? I need a fighter next to me right now. And that's the things that I just would try to instill into my guys that were around me.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Nate. And, you know, I know this is straight football talk, but let's be honest here. 300 is one of the best movies ever. I mean, that is a phenomenal movie.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, hands down, one of the best movies ever.
if that doesn't have you ready to go out and start beating stuff down, I don't know what movie would. I'll tell you that right now.
I know that's right. I definitely agree with you.
Now, in 2014, Nate, you caught an 80-yard touchdown pass against your old team, your brothers, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers. What did that mean to you? And how, you know, I guess the question, how I want to phrase this is, what was your reaction when you did it against them?
Well, to be honest, we have been talking about that play, and I remember it like it was yesterday. We have been talking about that play all week long. We don't install our – typically an NFL team doesn't install their weekly game plan until Wednesday. But at the time, our head coach, Ken Wisenhunt, he came up to me like Monday. It was like, yeah, you know, we got – you know, and he was like – it was a guy on there, William Gay. You got Pittsburgh Steelers. He was my little brother. He was there with me in Pittsburgh as well. But we knew that William Gay was going to be on one side of the field. We knew that there was going to be an opportunity. So Coach Wisenhunt, you know, every single day we ran that same exact play. No matter how long, no matter how bad I wanted to run it or not, if I didn't want to run it, he still was going to call that play throughout the day in the week of practice to make sure we had it right. And the game came around, and actually – he called me to the sideline and was like, "After you score, he said, no, this is exactly what he said. He said, "After you score right here, I want you to tell Willie Gay about himself and tell him that I said it." So it was kind of funny because he went out and he said, "I'm calling the play." And it was right before halftime, so I wasn't expecting it at that time. So I took a deep breath because I knew it was a go ball, a double move go ball.
Right.
And I was like, "Whew. I just got done running, too." So I came back in the huddle, and Zach was like,
all right, guy, here it is. I'm just going to give you a shot. And as soon as I ran the double move and I seen William Gabe bite, I said, oh, I know it's over. So when I scored, I was excited. After the game, all the guys that I knew from the Pittsburgh Steelers, they all came to me, including Ben. It was like, yeah, you just still trying to run by people, huh? I was like, what you expect me to do? So it was good. You know, my biggest thing at that time was because I was still in such close relationship with so many guys from Pittsburgh is that I really wanted to prove to them that what they believed in at that time was valuable. You know, those guys, the organization, you know, I'll never forget my rookie year when we won the AFC championship. I went up to, you know, Dan Rooney, Mr. Rooney himself. And I was still just a young guy. And I went up to him, Mr. Rooney himself. And it's just what type of organization it was. I said to him, Mr. Rooney, you know, I am so grateful for this opportunity to be on this team. You know, I was at Tiffin last year, and I never would have thought I would be here. This was right in the locker room after the AFC game, AFC championship. I mean, this was after the Super Bowl. This was in Detroit. And I went up to Mr. Rooney.
Oh.
And, and he appreciated the opportunity. And he looked at me confused. This was the older, may rest in peace, the older Mr. Dan Rooney. And he looked at me confused, and he looked up and he said, Nate, what are you talking about? You're the future of this team. Like, you're going to be around here for a couple of years. Like, we need you. And it blew me back. Like, first of all, I didn't think he knew my name because I was so low on the totem pole. But when I played against them in Tennessee, that was the reason why I wanted to play so hard, because of that belief, because of that, those statements from those guys, you know, even from Hines and Ben, even from Troy and Ryan Clark and all those guys, you know, they believed in me so much as a player and as a brother that it was impossible for me to go out there and not have a good game. You know, I wanted to go out there and compete against them just to make sure that they were proud of me, just as I was proud of them continuing on in their careers.
Absolutely. Now, Nate, we're gonna shift gears again one more time here. We're going to go to the more fun questions. I mean, this has been fun the whole time, but this is a little more, you know, a little more generic football talk, if you will. So every Friday, Straight Football Talk does a Friday's pick a player, and it just so happened we did a wide receiver this time, or two wide receivers. We do two players for one position, and everybody has to pick one player to be on their team, okay? This week, we had Calvin Johnson Jr., a.k.a. Megatron, versus Julio Jones. Who are you picking?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Megatron because he's a lot closer to my class, obviously. I think Tron, Julio, I mean, you can't go wrong, obviously, with either one.
Right.
But the bigger body – obviously, I seen Megatron make some definitely great plays above the ball, above the ground. You know, I think he's the first guy, probably the first guy we've seen a punt return vice on in the red zone. Two DBs actually lining up on him and trying to press him to keep him away from the fade ball and the slant because he was just too, you know, big to stop. You know, I think.
Absolutely.
At the end of the day, there was nothing that he couldn't do, from catching the ball over the middle to making the jump ball spectacular play. Obviously, Julio can do the same things, but I'm just going to go with Megatron just because he's a little closer to my draft class.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that's the thing, too. You know, we put those up there, and a lot of people just right away instantly, Megatron, Megatron, Megatron. It's like, man. Julio's good, too. I mean, I'd be happy with either one, to be honest. But, yeah, I agree with you, Nate. I think
definitely.
It's Megatron for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely have to go with that way.
Now, these next few questions, we ask these of every athlete, Nate. First up, we ask the athletes, would you be willing to send us a jersey? And the reason why I want to explain myself, it's not so I can wear it and, you know, show off. What it is we're wanting to take these jerseys and frame them up, have them behind us, you know, our own Straight Football Talk Wall of Fame, if you will, you know, showing the fans and everybody that tunes in, you know, listen, these guys take time out of their day, their busy schedules, and talk with us, and we get to share their story with them, you know, and have a good time. Would you be willing to send us a jersey?
This is the thing.
I don't have any more jerseys. I just got wiped out last week with my last. I had one that I was holding on to for like 2 years now. But this is what I would say. If you send me one, I'll be willing to sign it and get it right back to you. Normally, I don't do that because it's mayhem trying to, especially now being retired, trying to get everybody's in. But I would definitely take care of that for you guys if you want to do that way.
Awesome. I'll be sure to message you, Nate. I really appreciate that. Now, this next one, this is more of a fun one for you. You're doing a little shout-out for yourself here. What we want you to do is for you to say your name. This is Nate Washington, and you're listening to Straight Football Talk. And you can even say, this is your boy, or you can do your 300 rally, however you want to do it. But just say your name, and you're listening to Straight Football Talk.
This is your boy, Nate Washington, and you're listening to Straight Football Talk.
Love it, man. Perfect. And, of course, last question of the night for you, Nate. Easiest one of the night. Are you willing to come back on the show and talk more football with us, especially as the season gets closer?
I'll talk to you guys soon. How about that?
Sounds great, man. Sounds great. Listen, Nate, we appreciate you calling in and hearing out your story and some of the stories that you could share with us and the players that you spent time with. We loved it. Definitely going to have you back on. And again, thank you so much.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me, Teddy. I appreciate it. It was a great interview.
Take care, man.
All right, you do the same.
Guys, great interview with Nate Washington. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Just as a football fan, not even as a Steelers fan, I loved hearing the stories about him playing at Tennessee. It was phenomenal. Had a lot of great memories there. I wouldn't have guessed his favorite quarterback while he was at Tennessee would have been Jake Locker. Never would have guessed that in a million years, to be honest with you. But, like I said, great interview. This coming Sunday, guys, unless another, crazy pop-up exclusive comes up, we'll see you guys Sunday. Draft talk, okay? Chicago Bears, their draft grade that we're going to give them. San Francisco 49ers and their draft grade we're going to give them. We also have a couple of exclusives. We'll announce that, we'll put that on our Facebook page and all over social media, so be sure to watch out for that, and you'll get to see who's coming on this Sunday. Guys, loved having you on. Great tuning in. Fernando, take care. Everybody else, take care. See you Sunday.